Andy Herman. Andy Herman, Andy Herman. Andy Herman, Andy Herman.
I like it.
What's up, Andy?
I don't know how to respond to that introduction, but I am excited now. You know, Packers number one seed. What's there not to celebrate about?
What more do you need to get hype other than your own intro music and the number one seed for the Green Bay Packers?
I mean, nothing else. That's it. Everyone can get that.
That's the video. Thanks, everyone. No, I'm here talking to Andy Herman on Let's Talk Football each and every day after the game. That's what I like to do. Because, look, we got a lot of fine folks covering this here team. The Green Bay Packers, but the Don of the Pack a Day podcast is your one-stop shop for all the football talk you're ever going to need, which is why I like to do it. Let's start with the defense, because we usually start with the offense, or we'll talk, you know, let's start with the defense. Let's talk about this group. I mean, you can't put it any other way. They are gelling at the right time, whether it's the pressure up front, whether it's the guys in the back end. And it's interesting because I saw a lot of hand-wringing yesterday during the game, and I was one of them, wringing my hands on the watch party. It is interesting how the bend but don't break thing, the playing off and short yardage, et cetera, when you pull back and watch the game after it's over, it kind of makes sense. And I kind of understand the vibe and what he's going for. But damn, in the moment, it is so frustrating. And it's funny that all of a sudden you get to those third and one, fourth and one, gotta have it. And then they make that play to basically seal the game. So you know they've got it in them. It's just interesting that he doesn't ever want to kind of utilize that type or style of defense on every third and short.
It's interesting, but it just goes to show you how insanely hard it is to paper cut a team to death in today's NFL. Like, you just look at the overall efficiency of both the offense and the defense in this game, and the Packers offense, hell, they scored what, you know, 30 some points on like 40 some plays. Like, it was almost like it wasn't far off from like a point per play run, which is insane. Whereas the Chicago Bears run 70 some plays and they end up with 16 points, three of which were a direct result to a Tavon Austin fumble. So right. The defense deserves a ton of credit for holding to a field goal in that situation. So, kudos to the Fox announcers for saying all day long, like, you can't settle for field goals against Green Bay. You can't settle for field goals. And here they were settling for field goals, even in some fourth and short situations, which I thought was interesting. And that ultimately comes back to haunt the Bears. You know, it's frustrating in the moment at times to watch, because you see these third and twos, these fourth and ones, and it's these consistent short conversions. And it's, you just want to get the hell off the field. And you also know how exciting your offense is. Exactly. So you just want them to get back on the field, and you're almost just like, just score. I just want to see the offense back on the field. But when you
peel who amongst back, us who has played Madden has not gone
exactly
that route.
Exactly. On. So, you know, but for, again, when you peel back the layers of it and you see, and you look at, and they've scored 13 points again on the defense, not including the three that the special teams allowed, and the average yards per play and the efficiency. Listen, if you're, how do you want to beat Green Bay? If you want to get into an efficiency struggle, Green Bay is going to kick your ass. If you want to get into a shootout, Green Bay is going to kick your ass. So pick your poison, but it's going to be really tough to paper cut the Packers to death like the Bears tried to do this last game.
And it was interesting because you talk about that, you know, and that's that goes back to the Tampa 2 days and Tony Dungy talking about, look, if you're going to try and drive 12, 13 plays every time, you're going to make a mistake sooner or later, or we're going to get the better of you one of those times. And it was interesting to see them, like you say, the kind of paper cut approach. The one spot where they really kind of got after the Packers was when they finally got that deep ball on them. And Savage, I think, is just caught kind of peeking up, you know, trying. They had been basically needing to press up because everything was short. Everything was intermediate. And they took that one shot and it worked. And to me, that's where going ahead, who knows who they're going to face, you know, in a couple weeks. But that's the way to maybe, if you have a little bit better, more talent, better quarterback, et cetera, that to me is how teams are going to try to attack the Packers. Because I'm with you. There's no way you can do it drive after drive after drive. You're just not going to keep up. We've seen the Packers do this how many times over the course of the last month and a half, where they get up two or three scores and they almost coast. Like, you hate to say it, but they kind of get to that point where, okay, the game is pretty much in hand now. And I do think if teams want to keep up, so to speak, they're going to have to be able to take those shots, but they're going to do it out of the paper cut approach, where we're going to get Green Bay thinking, okay, we got to step up. We got to close up. And then all of a sudden we're going to take our deep shot.
Yeah, and I think that makes a ton of sense. And, you know, that's obviously something that Green Bay is going to have to be aware of. I think overall this season, they've done a really good job in limiting those big plays. It almost seemed like Darnell Savage didn't think that Trubisky could get the ball over his head. Like, he almost took like a step sloping down, almost feeling like, all right, Mitch isn't either going to throw it here or he's not going to get it there. And then he got it there. So tip your cap. But I think Savage will be better prepared for that moving forward. But, you know, and really it's such a huge difference from the defense earlier this season and the defense now. Before it was bend and break. Now it's bend, but don't break. And that's just, it's a night and day difference in that regards. And then also before it's one thing again, to allow those 12, 13 play drives. What you're hoping for, like you said, is some of those mistakes that you can take advantage of. Green Bay still left some out on the field. The Kevin King drop, Chandon had a drop. Jair had one where if he probably goes for the ball, he maybe has a pick instead of hitting a wide receiver on a play. But you almost get the turnover from Amos, and then you still get the Jair fumble, and then you get the Amos interception. So those are starting to come, and you're starting to see the Packers be in better position to take advantage of those.
What did you think when you saw Snacks Harrison out there? I know he only played a handful of snaps, but what was your kind of first kind of take from what little we saw of him?
There were a couple plays. There's one play in particular where he's about 3 yards into the backfield, and the run, David Montgomery, I think, had to like cut around him a little bit. And the image in my mind is that there's one other defensive lineman on the team that can do that. Like, Kenny Clark is it. Dean Lowry, Tyler Lancaster, those guys, they can hold up at the point of attack here and there, and they can do some of those sort of things. Kingsley Kiki, maybe every once and again, once in a while can do that, but you don't see it with any sort of consistency. So just the fact that you're seeing a player that has that ability to reset the line of scrimmage, even if it's for a handful of plays out of 12 to 15 snaps that he gets, sign me the hell up. That's right. Exactly what he's there for. And I don't know that he needs to provide much more than that if he can do that consistently through the rest of the season.
You mentioned Kevin King, and obviously Jair is continuing his All-Pro campaign. Kevin King is an interesting study in frustration, because I get fans who, I literally this morning I logged on to do my daily chat, and I am not exaggerating, there were at least 10 comments before I even began the chat about Kevin King's tackling or lack thereof. And I understand in the sense of, again, in the moment, it's really frustrating to watch. But they've won a lot of games with him tackling or not tackling like that. That's how he plays. Yeah. And would I prefer he wraps up? Yeah, of course I would. Yeah. But you know what? They're winning lots of ball games. Their defense is doing a hell of a job. And for all his pluses and minuses, like, I don't know. It's just funny to me that, like, of all the things, people got to find something to nitpick. So that's the thing. And again, they're going to win with him. Kevin is clearly never going to be Jair, but it does seem funny that a defense that held them to 16, almost 13 points, really did a good job of limiting pretty much anything once they got to the red zone. It's just, this is the one nit that he will always be the nit that fans love to pick.
I think there always has to be a whipping boy, right? Like, there's always got to be somebody.
Jared Bush of 2020.
Exactly. So, it seems like MBS is going to be that guy on offense. It seems like Kevin King is going to be that way on defense, and you'll see them come up with some plays, but then you'll see those, frustrating plays, whether it's, completely whiffing on a tackle, not wrapping up, some things like that. But it was really interesting to me because, I've all of a sudden been labeled like this Kevin King defender, which, like, I think he's fine.
Which is hilarious to me, because I think you've been as like vocal about his shortcomings than
exactly
anybody.
But to me, it's just an obvious case to me that there's nobody better on the roster to play the number two corner than him right now. And I think he's a little bit slightly better than what people think that he is. And I just think your corners are always in a position where there's very few positives that are going to come, and it's always going to be a negative. And very few players play the position the way that Jair Alexander does. And because Jair Alexander plays the position the way that he does, guys like Chandon Sullivan and Kevin King are going to get exponentially more targets because they're not throwing at Jair Alexander. So exactly. He had a couple pass breakups. I didn't think there was anything outside of, yes, there was a couple plays where, again, he's throwing shoulders, missing tackles. There were a couple of those on film. I'm excited to go back and watch it. But at first glance, I didn't see anything that was egregious. And when you've got, guys like, Allen Robinson that aren't getting completion, that's not just Jair, that's King on the other side as well. I don't know. I think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves, even if, yes, there's definitely some warts in his game.
I definitely agree there. Wrapping up on the defensive side of the ball, we got to talk about Adrian Amos, because this guy, you and I have been in lockstep on Adrian basically since camp.
Before that, we both talked about him in the free agency preview prior to last season two seasons ago, and we're Amos would be a fit. So
I mean, here's the thing too, is like he's exactly what the doctor ordered as far as the kind of stalwart back there, and you know Savage is your kind of athlete, right? Amos has been so much better than I expected. Like I thought he'd fit, like we just mentioned. Yeah. But he has developed this year in a way that I find surprising for a guy who had some pelts on the wall. You know, he had a number of good years in Chicago, and I thought a good year last year. But this year, he has improved. And I don't know why I sound so shocked, but I kind of am. You know, it's like I didn't see this ceiling for him, and I'm happy to be surprised.
I agree with you completely. And I think the thing is around, I don't know, it was maybe like 8 weeks ago, right around the time of the defense started to play a little bit better. To me, they kind of solidified those safeties a little bit more. You started to see Darnell play a little bit more. Robert, we've now seen Adrian Amos start playing some box, and we've seen Vernon Scott, Will Redmond play a little bit more free safety to kind of free those guys up as well. And I just think what they've done with the safeties has been absolutely gorgeous. I think both of them, you can see, are playing with trust with one another. They know where each other are going to be. I think Darnell taking that step has also freed up Amos a little bit to be put in some more playmaking positions. I really like him in the box, you know, in that kind of Raven Green role when they've used him in those situations. But the thing about Amos that was so crazy over the course of the last couple of seasons, last year and when I went back and watched him in his last season in Chicago before he came over, is there are so few players that if you're not getting big plays that are still look really good on film, like at some point, if you're not making big plays, you're probably giving up some plays here and there. And like, it's not going to even out. You're probably giving up more plays than what you're getting. With Amos, it was the exact opposite. Yeah. He'd make a couple of plays here and there, but his play was just so solid and consistent all the way around. And my thought kind of with his play in Chicago and even in Green Bay last year is like, if you play that solid of football for so long, eventually some balls are going to start bouncing your way. Eventually, you're just going to be in the right place at the right time because you're playing such sound football. And I think that's what we're starting to see with Amos this year, is that he's always been really great and really sound. And now all of a sudden, he's starting to get the ball bounce his way and start making some of these plays that maybe have, for whatever reason, avoided him throughout his career.
Well, and I think your point about the trust in each other at the safety spot, it really shows up because, hey, as Packers fans, if we are, you know, experts at anything, it is safeties looking at each other, pointing at each other after a play. The old "I thought you had him," we don't see that. And even if there is a play made downfield, it's never guys looking around going, "Where was my help?" or "Where were you?" or any of that. Like the way that you see, not just the safeties but the corners as well, breaking on the ball. A lot of these pass breakups, there's no hesitation. I know my assignment. I'm seeing, I'm reacting, I'm trusting everyone else. And to me, like I said, it's been a while since we've seen that in Green Bay. I would go back to probably that stretch run at the end of 2014 since we've seen a defense playing with this much cohesion.
Not Rollins, Gunter, Randall?
I'm going to go with no on that one, but that's just me. I'll have to go back and watch the tape. Let's look at the offensive side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers. That's it. That's the tweet. I mean, this guy, come on now. 4 touchdowns, 140-something rating. He's an absolute magician, and I have absolutely 1,000,000,000% run out of things to say about him.
Agreed. And I think the thing that I love more than anything is the 70%+ completion percentage this season, the highest of his career. Playing with a level of efficiency. You retweeted the Ben Fennell tweet of knowing where his outlets are. I thought that was a phenomenal point by Ben, of just knowing where everything is, where your outlets are. We've seen so much. You know, you brought up the magician word, which he has been, but it's been a magician within the pocket and within the confines of the offense for the majority of it. And then we're still seeing, in the ever so rare occasion where he has to scramble and buy time, that you're still seeing some of those amazing Aaron Rodgers vintage plays that we've come to expect and appreciate throughout the course of his career. But you don't get the 70% completion numbers and the efficiency and all those sorts of things and the 40+ touchdowns with 5 interceptions if you're just trying to buy time and keep your eyes downfield and look for big plays all day. The fact that he has bought in hook, line, and sinker to this offense, and that Matt LaFleur has built an offense around what Aaron Rodgers is so ridiculously good at, it's just been this what more could you have possibly asked for when Mark Murphy introduced the head coach and said, right, we need to make sure that Rodgers is playing at peak Aaron Rodgers level, that hire was about making sure Aaron Rodgers could look like this again. And it took a year of kind of going through some mixed matching between McCarthy's offense and LaFleur's offense. And now it's this. I'm with you. I don't know what else to say. It's been gorgeous to watch. Honestly, one of my favorite seasons of an offense that I can ever remember. I know the 2011 was great, but there was always a burden of expectation after the Super Bowl. Like, it's just been so fun to watch this year.
To me, too, it's interesting because after the Jordan Love selection, you heard a lot about Rodgers and maybe he comes out on fire, which, of course, he did. And he's had an amazing year. The thing I always heard, and I actually kind of still continue to hear, is, well, if Rodgers plays like this, obviously this is his, insane high level, etc. We thought this guy was gone, and it's interesting because it's not that guy. Like, say the run the table period, which was insane.
Yep.
One of the highest level of quarterback play I've ever seen, where a guy just basically dragged his team to the NFC championship game.
It's crazy.
But it's so amazing to see him put up even better numbers, but playing within the structure of the offense. I thought Ben's point was spot on as far as the not looking to escape, but rather hitting the check down. Let Aaron Jones do that work. Yeah. We don't need you to do that work anymore. And the fact that he's bought into that, it's the night and day kind of scenario where, like you said, last year, still glimpses of the McCarthy stuff. Rodgers mentioned it for the first time on his availability a couple weeks ago, where he said, there were, some moments this offseason where we said, okay, the stuff that we tried to hold over really isn't working, and we just junked it. And I think that's the first time he's admitted that was, just exercised from the playbook, which I think we were all in agreement needed to be done.
Yep.
But yeah, to see him completely embrace that part of it, I think is going to extend his career, frankly. It could easily, maybe not in Green Bay, could extend him for, another 4 or 5 years.
It absolutely could. It was always interesting to me because he always spoke so glowingly of Tom Brady and how Tom Brady played. But then he would play in a way like kind of Rogers, the exact opposite.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Again, it was what worked. And again, during the run the table and some of those seasons without the weapons and without the offensive line in front of him, I think it became something he had to do. And then it became kind of a habit after that, yeah, which again, I totally get, but it was really interesting to see. And I'm not saying he's playing exactly like Tom Brady or anything like that. I'm just saying, you saw Brady for so many years just take those checkdowns, take what's there, take what's available. And you just wanted to see a little bit more of that and really save some of the magicianry for some of those, late game situations where you need to come back, or if it's a third and long or a fourth and long, whatever the case may be, right, save it for those moments where you need it, but play within the confines of the offense up until that point. And this is exactly what we've seen this year, and it's been gorgeous to watch.
Speaking of Aaron Rodgers playing in rhythm and getting the ball out, I think that helped go a long way with Billy Turner and Rick Wagner in their first kind of foray after post David Bakhtiari going down. I thought they held up okay. I thought they, did their jobs, but man, Aaron really helps them in the sense of getting the ball out.
Well, it's interesting. I tweeted last week that my grades for the offensive line this year, compared to last year, even without David Bakhtiari included in it, were like three times as good this year. Right. And a big piece of that is because you're seeing Aaron Rodgers get the ball out of his hands with a level of precision. Now, obviously I'm not taking, a one step drop back and grading the offensive line huge in those situations,
right,
but still, because you're not seeing them in so many pressure pack situations, that it gives the offensive line an opportunity to, to protect, much easier when Rodgers isn't kind of scrambling around and buying time. So when Bakhtiari goes out, there's obviously this initial huge reaction. And I do think that there's a potential weakness, if you do get into a game where you're down by 10 points and you have to score late in games and you have to go more 11 personnel and defensive linemen can just tee off. We saw that in a way happen against Tampa Bay with Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett and those guys. And Green Bay struggled in those situations because now all the eye candy, the jet motions, the play actions, all of that doesn't matter when you're losing. You just have to throw the ball and get points. So I think in those situations, I'll be interested to see how those guys hold up. But I thought they did a really nice job. I'm interested to see how the run game looked because it didn't seem to always be clicking on all cylinders in this game. Credit to Mac and Quinn and the defensive tackle, who's Akeem Hicks, who are fantastic in this game. But I'll be interested to see how they did in the run game as well.
The thing is, too, you talk about the run game and Aaron Jones. I said it. I was kind of contemplating the team as my made my way to the studio yesterday, and it just kind of hit me like there's so much oxygen taken up over the course of the last month or so around Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams for good reason. They've been amazing. There's no doubt about it. But it really feels that Aaron Jones has quietly been excellent as well, but is somewhat underappreciated and or taken for granted because all he does is create. Like, it doesn't matter how it's blocked. He just creates. And whether that's the running game or the passing game. And, you know, I loved him with flashing the bling there in the end zone. You know, yeah, I got to pay the guy. But, man, he if they do, and I suspect they probably will have to let him walk, they are going to miss him, man, because he is something special.
He is. And it's I don't even want to have the conversation about running backs and paying running backs because I've literally been split in half.
It ain't let's talk salary cap. It's let's talk football. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So I've literally been split in half in that
apologize.
Debate. But,
I apologize.
You're all good. But no, he's such a fun player to watch. And just you look at him and the eye test says he looks like a fine running back. Maybe he's going to pick up the 3 yards that are blocked for him or whatever the case may be. And it could not be further from the truth. He's just an overall weapon. He had another really nice pass protection this past game. The plays he made in the passing game, there was a big third down where he breaks three tackles and picks up not only the first down, but additional yards after that.
That's the check down that Ben showed.
You're
I mean,
you're right.
He's literally behind the sticks when that happens. That should be a tackle for basically minimal gain and they should be off the field. Instead, absolutely, it's like a 15-yard gain after three broken tackles.
And you look at the box score, and I think it was like 85 total yards or something, but it's like 60 of that was stuff that wasn't even there. Like that
exactly.
So he's so fun to watch. And I don't, whatever happens, happens, but you know, as much as I hate paying running backs, I would hate to lose Aaron Jones at the same point, which is why I said I'm split literally in half in this one.
I totally hear it. All right. I'm talking to Andy Herman, the Don himself of the Pack-A-Day podcast. Andy, is there a foe that you hope the Packers meet in the divisional round?
There's not. To me, the only team that can beat the Packers is the Packers if they play their brand.
Packers Daily? It feels like I've said that. Like
I frequent every once in a while, Aaron, you know? But no, I think the only team that can beat them is themselves. If they play their brand of football, they can beat everyone, especially within Lambeau. And I think, you know, The great part about the playoffs is this isn't going to be easy. And there's going to be demons that you have to exercise, right? Whether it's the Buccaneers, who they lost to by double digits earlier this year, whether it's Seattle, which is always a shit show in some capacity, way, shape, or form. Like, no matter what happens, there's going to be demons that you're going to have to exercise throughout the road to the playoffs. And I expect that to be the case for the Packers. You're probably going to have Mason Crosby miss his first field goal, be down double digits, whatever the case may be. Something's going to happen where you have to overcome it. And throw everything else out the window. This is going to be amazing. It's going to be at Lambeau Field. The playoffs run through Green Bay. It's going to be some really exciting matchups. And I think Green Bay is going to be up to the task as long as they play their brand of football, which I think they will. And I think you give, you know, Matt LaFleur a couple weeks and then that offense a couple weeks to scheme things up. I think they'll get that first win. And then it's NFC championship time. I'm so excited to see what's going to transpire these next few weeks.
Couldn't agree more. It's always great to talk to Andy Herman, Don of the Pack-A-Day podcast, purveyor of fine Packers takes across your internet. Andy, thanks so much for the time, man.
Aaron.